regulated militia being necessary for the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. I'm glad that you're with me on the program today. You know, when we were wrapping up yesterday's program, I said we'd be talking about the Third Circuit decision in the Coons and Siegel cases dealing with New Jersey's post-Bruin carry laws. We may revisit that in the future, but obviously yesterday afternoon with the assassination of Charlie Kirk, things have changed, right? When we got off the concluded yesterday's program, that hadn't happened. In fact, I was doing my weekly live chat with Hot Airs at Morrissey and our VIP Gold and VIP Platinum members. And one of the folks in the live chat had, you know, just talked about kind of the unsettling events of the previous couple of days, right? And looking at it from a global perspective, the fall of France's government, Russia's drone incursion into Poland. And, you know, I said, I think we are living in unsettling times. And then literally just a couple of minutes after we concluded that live chat, the news broke that Charlie Kirk had been shot. We later learned that Charlie Kirk had been assassinated. As of mid-morning on Thursday, the latest that we know is no suspect is in custody. Authorities are talking about a college-aged individual. Apparently, they have recovered what they are describing as a high-powered bolt-action rifle that apparently was the murder weapon. But again, very little details about the individual. I don't know if they have a person in mind that they have not named yet, or if they are just going off of, you know, what they've been able to see in surveillance video and that leads them to describe this individual as a college-aged person. So that's the latest in terms of the investigation. We don't have a lot to go on. Of course, you know, again, two individuals questioned and later released, originally described as persons of interest. One described actually as a suspect by FBI Director Kash Patel, but apparently that was not the case. You know, and then we get into the reaction that we have seen. Obviously, the outpouring of grief and sympathy for Charlie Kirk's wife, his two young children, his extended family, his friends. You know, we've seen colleagues of Charlie's just, you know, break down and weep as they talked about his life, how he lived it. We've also seen, you know, I think across the political spectrum, calls to that have denounced political violence, which I completely agree with. But sadly, we've also seen some folks openly celebrating Charlie Kirk's assassination, some folks feigning apathy, you know, and some of that I'm sure is, you know, bots, not real people. Some of it may even be foreign actors who are trying to foment dissension and division among us. But some of it's real. Some of it really is coming from individuals who refuse to see Charlie Kirk's humanity, who refuse to acknowledge the grief of his widow, what this means to two young kids who will now have to grow up without their father. They are intent, I guess, in seeing Charlie Kirk only as a political figure with whom they vociferously disagreed, an object of hate rather than a human being. Over at Politico, there was a story, it may still be on the front page there. Can America unwind its Gordian knot of political violence? And, you know, I wrote about this at Bearing Arms earlier today. And, you know, I said, I don't think that we can come back from this. but I think we can get through it. And I, you know, I feel very much today like I felt in the days and weeks after Missy passed away in January of this year, after my oldest son Harrison died in 2022. And you don't, I think, as an individual, come back or get over the loss of a loved one. As a nation, I don't think that you come back or get over an event like this, whether it's the assassination of Charlie Kirk, whether it's the assassination of Martin Luther King, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Anytime we have a hybrid, heck, we're the 24th anniversary of 9/11 today. Did we get over that as a nation? I don't think so. Have we lived through it? Yes. Have we? Do we continue to live with the memory and the pain of 9/11? For those of us who were alive back then, absolutely. I think that is the case. And I think that's going to be the case here with the assassination of Charlie Kirk. This isn't an event that we as a nation will get over. But this moment that we live in of increased political violence, and it's not just the assassination of Charlie Kirk. Again, you've had the assassination of a Minnesota state representative, the attempted assassination of a state senator. You had the firebombing of a Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro's home. You had the murder of UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson. That's just to name a few events. Obviously, the attempted assassination of President Donald Trump. Right? I mean, if you go back over the course of a year, there have been a lot of instances of political violence. So I think we are living in that moment, right? So how do we get through it? This is where I struggle, honestly. At Bearing Arms, I talked about what we can do as individuals, but I you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that even if everybody who reads that piece or, you know, even who shares it with their friends and family, even they all follow that advice. We still live in a world in which there are people who will hate us for our points of view. We still live in a world where there are nihilists out there who just want to see it all burn. I don't think that's the case for the vast majority of us. I believe that the vast majority of us, no matter our disagreements with our political opponents, still on some level are able to see them as human beings. But not everybody is. And that is something that we are going to have to come to terms with and recognize. I think it's also important to recognize that anger is a legitimate part of grief. You know, I saw so many politicians, well-meaning politicians, on Wednesday afternoon appeal to, you know, the angels of our better nature. We have to come together. We have to, you know, again, denounce political violence. Again, I don't disagree with any of that. But let's recognize that it is okay to be angry today. Anger is a legitimate part of grief. The issue is, what do we do with that anger? How do we properly put that anger in a place where it is not going to cause more harm, do more damage? And again, I go back to, you know, after Miss E passed away, I certainly was angry. I think I was angrier more when she was alive, when she was having to deal with the cancer that would ultimately take her life. I think I was angrier then, after 8 years and 6 months, really, of her really struggling. There was a sense of relief that she wasn't suffering anymore. But I did go through that anger. But was also very cognizant that that anger lived inside of me. And I was very conscious that I didn't take that anger out on Missy, my family, her doctors. Instead, I tried to channel that anger. You know, I did some volunteer work. After she died, I actually, I've talked about this a couple of times. I essentially wrote and recorded an album, a concept album dealing with her grief. It'll probably never see the light of day, but I channeled that anger and I channeled those emotions and I put it out there. We can be angry. We should be angry at the individual who so callously murdered Charlie Kirk yesterday, presumably because of what Charlie Kirk believed. But again, I think it's important that we don't direct that anger where it doesn't belong. And that can be a challenge when we are emotional and when we are grieving and when there are so many individuals out there who are acting with such contempt and hatred of their own. It's easy to get into that cycle of, I'm going to lash out at them. I'm going to use that anger. I'm going to give it right back to them. And then you get stuck in this negative feedback loop. And I don't think that's healthy for us as individuals. I don't think it's healthy for us as a society. I don't think that's the right way to deal with the nihilists, to deal with those who, again, have decided to reject or ignore or refuse to acknowledge the humanity of those that they disagree with. I talked about this a little bit in my piece of Bearing Arms. When Miss E died, I actually had several folks from the gun control community who reached out to me privately. Some of them, I will say, very much boilerplate statements of sympathy. But not all of them. There were a few who I think were genuinely touched by Missy's death and were genuinely sympathetic, were genuinely interested in knowing that my family was okay. They recognized my humanity. And that's something that we've tried to do, I think, at Bearing Arms. I think it's something we've been successful at doing at Bearing Arms. You know, when we write about Fred Gutenberg or Manuel Oliver or Gabby Giffords or anybody else who, you know, is a gun control activist who has been impacted by the death of a loved one or have been the victim of violence themselves, I don't need to dehumanize them. I don't need to deny their humanity. I don't need to portray them as a monster for advocating for gun control. They can just be wrong. They can be flesh and blood human beings who are, again, racked with grief and pain, and who in that response to pain and that attempt to try to make their loved one's death have some meaning, advocate for things that I vociferously disagree with. And I can vociferously disagree with their opinion. I can vociferously disagree with their activism without denying them their humanity. And that's exactly what was done by this assassin yesterday. Denying Charlie Kirk's humanity. Refusing to see him as an individual. Seeing him only as the embodiment of ideas that they disagree with or hate. And so, you know, if we're looking to unwind the Gordian knot of political violence, as Politico put it today, I think that's one way to do it. You know, it starts within each and every one of us, right? You have to be what you want to see. And if you want to see less vitriol, then don't put vitriol out there. If you want to see, common ground, if not found politically, but found maybe deeper than politics, again, just that recognition that, okay, yes, you are a flesh and blood living human being, put that out there. Live your life that way. Now, again, not everybody's going to do that, which is one of the reasons why our right to keep arms continues to be so important. Because there are people out there that will hate you for what you stand for. They will hate you for what you believe. I heard from, gun control activists who expressed sympathy after Miss E died, after my son died. I heard from people who reveled in it. I heard from people who said that this was divine retribution. I got what was coming to me, that they hoped that I was in pain because they believe that my advocacy for the right to keep and bear arms causes pain to others. Because it results, they believe, in more violent crime. And if I would quit advocating for our right to keep and bear arms, if you would keep advocating for our right to keep and bear arms, if the Second Amendment went away tomorrow, that somehow that pain wouldn't happen. It would stop. I don't believe that to be true. Even beyond the Constitution, from a pragmatic standpoint, I don't believe that to be true. I look at countries like Mexico, look at what's going on in Jamaica. There are plenty of nations that have very restrictive gun control laws that have extraordinary high levels of violent crime. Look at what happened in Washington, D.C. during the decades that handguns were banned. The homicide rate at one point, I believe, was close to 80 murders per 100,000 residents. The vast majority of those murders committed committed by individuals who used guns that were illegal to possess in Washington, D.C. So I reject that premise, and I will continue advocating for our right to keep and bear arms. In fact, I believe it's more important than ever in this time of, in these moments that America has experienced, because this isn't the first one. But these moments where there is social tension, where there is political upheaval, where things are unsettled, I think it is more important in those moments than in times of peace and prosperity to be able to protect ourselves and the people that we love. It's certainly more necessary, maybe not more important, but it is more necessary. I don't think we come back from this. I think we get through it. And I believe that one of the ways that we get through it, again, is that acknowledgement that our political opponents are people too. Even when the other side refuses to acknowledge that, by the way, I think we still have to do that. Not for them, but for ourselves. I think we continue to advocate for the ideas and the beliefs that we hold dear. I don't believe that we should be silenced, because that's something else that I believe this assassin wanted to do. Now, I didn't always agree with Charlie Kirk. I think Charlie, just a couple weeks ago, was talking about banning all individuals who identify as transgender from owning guns. I don't agree with that. But Charlie, he didn't just welcome debate. He thrived on it. He didn't want to shut down the other side from speaking. He wanted to hear what they had to say, if only to try to prove them wrong. But he still wanted to hear what they had to say. And that is a fundamental aspect of the American experience that cannot and should not be lost. Charlie had his strong opinions about a lot of things. But I don't think it is fair to say that he ever tried to silence those that he disagreed with. Call them out. Prove them wrong. Shame them for what he thought were idiotic ideas. Absolutely. But silence them? No. I don't think Charlie Kirk was about that. The individual who took Charlie Kirk's life, though, I think that was the intent. And I would hate to see this country get to a point where we are afraid to express our opinions because we fear violence as a result. I mean, we certainly live in a day and age of people who want to police our speech. We have snowflakes who get upset by what we have to say and try to shut us down. And I don't think, by the way, that that's only limited to one side of the political spectrum. But I as an advocate for all of our individual rights, including our First Amendment right to speak freely, I hope that, again, one of the things that we do in the aftermath of Charlie Kirk's assassination, as we reckon as a nation with where we are at this moment in time, I hope that a majority of us, anyway, come to this understanding. Maybe reiterate this understanding that within a free and open society, there will inherently be disagreements. There will inherently be debate. That's supposed to happen. That's part of the process. And if you are interested in silencing those you disagree with, that fundamentally, you are part of the problem, no matter how much you might consider yourself to be part of the solution. It is a somber day today. You know, again, not only are we wrestling as a nation with the assassination of a public figure who was murdered for his ideas. Again, this is the 24th anniversary of the day that the United States was attacked because of what we are as a nation. And, you know, for those who are old enough to remember, there was a moment, I would say it lasted about 6 weeks, after 9/11, where we were as united a nation as we have been in my lifetime. It didn't last. Those moments never do. But in that window of time, I think we, not only did we have a common enemy in those who attacked us, but I think we also recognized that we had the commonality of being Americans, right? Those terrorists who tried to take America down to its knees, they weren't targeting Republicans. They weren't targeting Democrats. They weren't targeting white people or black people or Asian people. They were targeting us. All of us. They didn't care who we were. They didn't care what our backgrounds were. They didn't care about our life experiences. We were Americans. And that was enough to want to murder us. And so as Americans, we were, I think, able to recognize that and again, come together, at least in that aspect, at least for a brief period of time. This is a little different, right? We don't know anything at all about the suspect. I mean, again, it could be that the suspect had no clear-cut ideological motivation. I kind of doubt that, but I'm keeping open that possibility. So I don't know that we're going to see that that moment of near unanimity, much less, you know, 6 weeks or so, where we look at each other as fellow Americans as opposed to political and ideological opponents. But I hope that we do. I hope that we have that moment. I think this country needs that moment. Again, I don't know that we're going to get it because there are some Americans who don't want it. But for those who do, I hope that we're able to connect with our fellow Americans who want the same and to find common ground in our opposition to those who would seek to destroy us and our freedoms and everything that makes the United States the unique experiment that it is. All right. Let's turn our attention now to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a story out of Las Vegas. A probation revoked for Las Vegas teen caught with gun after manslaughter release. I'm not complaining about the fact that this teen's probation has been revoked. The fact that he was on probation for manslaughter, and really apparently only spent a couple of months behind bars for this crime. Las Vegas Review-Journal reports that yesterday Judge Dee Butler said that she had decided the teen's punishment before even hearing arguments from his attorneys and prosecutors, revoking his probation, sending the 16-year-old back to a youth correctional facility. According to the paper, the 16-year-old was initially taken into custody after police identified him as the shooter in the killing of a 17-year-old last October, Keanu Enright. Officers booked the teen, who was then 15 years old, on suspicion of open murder, but the charge was reduced to involuntary manslaughter after prosecutors could not prove intent. According to the Review Journal, the youth offender then spent, quote, several months in detention before he was released on parole after having completed rehabilitation requirements. 11 days later, less than 2 weeks after he was released from the several months that he spent in a youth facility for manslaughter. The teenager, who is a ward of the state, was arrested again, this time on a misdemeanor fire and possession charge. Teen admitted that while he was in foster care, he had a BB gun and violated his probation. According to the paper, his disposition hearing was postponed multiple times because Clark County Family Services struggled to develop a supervision plan if he were released. So, it sounds like you've got some multiple failures there on the part of agencies in Nevada, as well as the juvenile justice system itself. Layla Rose Hudson, who is one of the teen's attorneys, argued that the judge's decision would mark the boy's future, saying, "We are well on our way from the foster care to prison pipeline with this youth, and if you're institutionalizing him at this point, it will just cement that fact." Now, you could argue this is a BB gun, right? Why did the 16-year-old possess the BB gun? What did the BB gun look like? Did he intend for people to believe that this BB gun was an actual firearm in the commission of a crime? To me, those circumstances matter. The judge said she chose to send the boy back to juvenile detention, basically, for his safety and that of the community. She said, "What I want to happen this time is that the teen is brought back to court either immediately before release or immediately after release, because as we've heard, there's no plan with Clark County Family Services. There's no placement." She said, "I don't want a child to go to a youth correctional facility again. We're right back here before he has the opportunity to receive parole services." I don't know enough about this most recent case to have an informed opinion as to whether or not returning him to juvenile custody for possession of a BB gun is the right thing to do. But a couple of months behind bars for manslaughter, yeah, that's the sentence that sticks in my craw. And honestly, if there had been a more appropriate sentence applied the first time around, the teen wouldn't have been back in court on Wednesday. Woody. All right, on to today's armed citizen story. From Oakland, California, six shot, two fatally following robbery attempt at an Oakland pawn shop. You know, we are told all the time, you don't need more than 10 rounds because, you know, the average number of shots fired in a defensive gun use is, what, 2.82, according to a study, discredited study, by the way, by U.S. District Judge Roger Benitez, who pointed out some of the flaws in that study and his decision in Duncan versus Bonner, which struck down California's ban on so-called large-capacity magazines. Of course, the Ninth Circuit overturned Judge Benitez, and I believe we are waiting in Supreme Court review, right? The Duncan cert petition, I think, has been filed. We're now waiting on California's reply. This is one of the cases that the justices will likely consider in conference this fall, along with another magazine ban challenge out of the state of Washington. Well, here in Oakland, California, you had five individuals target a pawn shop on Wednesday evening. It was 5-1. And the owner of this pawn shop, unfortunately, was injured. But every one of his assailants injured or killed in the attack. According to investigators, individuals, quote, armed with weapons, entered the pawn shop, and an exchange of gunfire took place between these individuals and the workers inside the establishment, according to the department. Officers arrived at the scene. ABC 7 News reports they located multiple people who were struck by the gunfire. Medical personnel confirmed that one person was deceased. Five others who were struck by gunfire, including the business owner, were taken to an area hospital, where a second person was confirmed dead. The remaining three suspects were in stable condition. As of 10:30 last night, the owner is expected to survive, according to Oakland Police Officers Association spokesperson Sam Singer. He said a robber allegedly pulled a gun on the store owner, who then pulled a gun on the robber and four accomplices. Singer said a, quote, major gun battle ensued. The store owner allegedly shot and killed the two people. Two of the suspects wounded the other three. Detectives are conducting a follow-up investigation of the circumstances surrounding the shooting, according to the Oakland Police Department. They'll be holding a press conference later today. I don't know if the Oakland police chief will say what the former Oakland police chief said a couple of years ago when a business owner pulled out a firearm to defend a woman who was being assaulted. At that point, the then Oakland police officer said, "We don't want armed citizens. You know, we don't want business owners carrying guns." Basically said, if you see something happening, you know, take down a good description of the person committing an act of violence, you know, so that we can go arrest them after the fact. But no, we don't want people standing up for those who are being harmed, presumably themselves as well. Again, I hope we don't hear that from the police chief in Oakland today. I hope that we hear some praise for this armed citizen who, again, facing five assailants, acted to protect his life and successfully did so. Now, I don't know if the store owner had a gun with a large capacity, quote-unquote, magazine. If the handgun that he possessed was California compliant, I don't know. It is entirely possible that the store owner could end up facing gun charges if he had a Glock with a 17-round magazine. I think it would be absolutely absurd, but it's not outside the realm of possibility. But this is a reminder that, you know, when we are faced with actually exercising our Second Amendment rights to defend ourselves, there's no guarantee it's going to be a fair fight. Right? There's no guarantee it's going to be one-on-one. In fact, criminals are going to want to get the upper hand. They're going to want to put you in a position where it is difficult, if not impossible, for you to protect yourself. Which is all the more reason why the state should not hamstring us by imposing these arbitrary limits on the number of rounds we're able to possess in a magazine at any given time. You know, I guess California Attorney General Rob Bonta's response would be, well, you know, carry extra magazines, right? Nothing's stopping you from doing that. I mean, you can have 4 10-round magazines if you want. Okay, why can't, if I can have 40 rounds, you know, divvied up by 4 separate magazines, why can't I have 36 rounds in 2 magazines? Why place those arbitrary limits on me? Why tell me that I have to stop and reload while there are people who are actively attacking me? Why put me at that disadvantage against my assailants? Public safety? I mean, that doesn't sound like a very good excuse to me. We'll see if we get any more information out of Oakland, but I'm glad to know that this business owner is expected to recover. And again, hopefully California's magazine ban will soon be no more if the Supreme Court accepts Duncan versus Botta or Gators Custom Guns versus Ferguson, I believe, is the other case. All right, on to finally today's good deed of the day from Jones County, Mississippi, where a elderly man was rescued after a accident with his zero-turn lawnmower. According to WJTV in Jackson, Mississippi, this happened Wednesday afternoon. Guy was on a zero-turn. Somehow managed to flip it into a ditch, so it's on top of him. A passerby, don't know if he was walking or driving, but came upon the accident. Jones County deputies say a group was able to lift the lawnmower off of the victim using the winch cable of a tow truck. The injured man transported to a nearby hospital for treatment of apparent multiple injuries. Victim told deputies that he had been trapped underneath the lawnmower for 90 minutes. You know, and again, that's a situation where, firsthand. I mean, you might see that headline, oh, a lawnmower flipped over. I mean, these things are heavy, right? A group of people had to use a winch of a tow truck. A group of people struggled to physically lift that lawnmower off of the individual. If he had been stuck into there for 90 more minutes, we don't know how much worse this would have been. So in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing for a stranger in need, the anonymous Good Samaritans who helped that individual in Jones County, Mississippi, we thank you for your very, very good deed. That is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. I'll be back on Monday with another edition, but be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day today, Friday, and the weekend, keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information. Obviously, we are following the investigation into the assassination of Charlie Kirk very closely, but there is a lot of other important news regarding your right to keep and bear arms out there, whether it is, again, litigation, legislation. The Glock ban bill is still alive in California, has been amended, which is a sign that the proponents of that bill are still working to get it to Governor Gavin Newsom's desk. We actually even have, you know, some cultural attacks on support for the Second Amendment. A business owner in Long Island who wants to have a raffle selling off a rifle to raise money for a local high school sports team, running into all kinds of pushback from the school district and now from the state of New York. We'll be covering that story as well. So again, I would encourage you to head over to BearingArms.com throughout the day, today, Friday, and over the weekend. If you like what you see, I'd also encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. Just use the promo code FIGHT. You can get 60% off your VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum membership. We certainly do thank you for your support. Until we talk again, be well. Be safe. And be free.